Hey, all, before we start the episode proper, just want to do a little quick programming note. For the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be pretty unavailable to do any editing whatsoever, unfortunately. We do have a couple episodes in the hopper that Carter and I have ready to release once they've been edited. Unfortunately, the busyness is already kind of started, and so like even this episode was edited in small chunks over the last few days, but I really wanted to get it out this week. But it's just things have it's just getting to the point where realistically, until this all calms down, I'm not going to be able to do any editing. Sorry it's a little late. Unfortunately, there won't even be Lorekeeper Juniors to look forward to in the next couple of weeks. I apologize for that. But programming should resume. Let me get my calendar out here. So if everything goes right, there should be an episode on Tuesday, October 27th, but I cannot say that for sure. I would like to make sure that that does happen, but I can't really make any guarantees. It could be the next week. No more than that, though. Definitely before the end of October. We'll get back to it as soon as we can, and hope you enjoy this episode. Carter and I are pretty proud of this one. We think, honestly, we've been really enjoying this whole miniseries. It's been a lot of fun. I have some ideas of sort of absentium adjacent material or things that aren't specifically focused on the gods, or rather the mutes. And so we may explore that on. When I return. But until then, there's I think two more episodes after this in the miniseries, and then we move on to other content within the season. But yeah, hopefully you enjoy. Apologies that the feed is gonna be quiet for a couple of weeks, and also that you have to listen to this terrible audio for this announcement. It's a normal episode audio, but I think this is a far more effective way of getting little bits of information in as we go here than just ghosting you on Twitter. So anyways, hope you enjoy and have a good rest of your day.
We are not heroes, nor are we villains. Neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Halloumenay.
Welcome to Halloumenay. You are, man.
You are fucked, and this is the intro.
Oh God, yeah. Basically, you've tuned into Lore Keepers, a podcast devoted to chronicling the serialized world building of a sprawling tapestry of interwoven lore. I am overheated.
I am underheated.
This season, our focus is on God. It's just really hot in this room. Faith and the relationship between mortals and immortals. So, actually, I think I'm going to turn the overhead off. So sit back, close your eyes, and let our tingling audio gateway sweep you into the realms of Halloumenay.
This week, Frank is turning the overhead off.
Oh, god damn.
And we're going to be doing yet another
oops.
Mute and their realm. And so we will need to roll for what we're doing.
I got new feet for my chair. And they have like little, they have locks
like
on two of the
hair or
wheels.
like a key.
No, they have got their like little roller, they're like rollerblady wheels, which are made to go both on carpets and hardwood, which I should have done a million years ago to prevent floors from getting scuffed because they're rubber and they just have like they're great, but also, they have locks on two of the wheels, so like I actually can kind of like just stay in place. It's pretty great now. Yeah, I'm gonna roll a d6. Where the fuck are my dice? If you're wondering why this is the energy we're bringing to this episode, one, I just turned off the light, so it feels a little bit more sleepy in here. And two, because we just spent the last hour and 14 minutes recording already, because it took us so fucking long, A, to get past the amble, and B, to figure out the name for Karnas's realm, which we'll include at the end, the beginning of the amble's end.
Oh,
okay. Getting my dice out. So, yep, we're rolling for these. I'm going to say a 1 and a 2 is Umbarak, 3 and a 4 is Gogra, and 5 and 6 is Parati.
All right, make it so.
3. That is Gogra. So Gogra's thing, she is one of two female-presenting mutes, and she is the mute of manipulation and subterfuge, which should be really interesting. Which, yeah, just as a tiny little baby recap, if you have forgotten, we're just sort of doing a mini-series where we're going through. Carter, did you already explain this?
I just said that we're doing mutes, talking about the realm.
Okay. Yeah. I was completely out of it. I'm like, I really do think that the heat is getting to me. Really, I think it's just humidity. It's like, okay, yeah. But we're doing a mini-series. We did Karnas previously. We did Lagazoth, who we renamed. Now we're on Gogra. So, all right. Well, first of all, it's the first female mute. I don't know if we really need to do anything with that. Like, I don't know if... Here's the thing. I did randomly roll all of the genders of the gods. And so that's why we end up with, I think, 5 female female regents and 4 male ones, and also only 2 female mutes. I thought it was, instead of trying to just do a balance thing or just put my own sort of expectations into it, I let the numbers decide. It is kind of interesting that the numbers gave me that manipulation and subterfuge were like a, I don't know, the manipulative woman is like a regularly used trope.
It's true.
You know? Like a lot in
the men wild,
you know, the master of
beguiling witch.
The master of exactly. Oh, you know, well, they don't have physical power, so they use manipulative social power.
So
I think we should probably just address that trope. Yeah, I know, right? Run in circles around you because you're just a big dumb man. But like, maybe we just talk about manipulation and subterfuge as ideas first, and then how they manifest in Halume, how they manifest specifically in the Absentium. Like, what are they doing? What are her people? I assume, well, I don't want to assume. Do you think they're more demons or devils, for starts?
That's a very good question, Frank.
I'm feeling devils, honestly, because I feel like the whole thing is devils are all about fucking with you. You know, the monkey's paw idea, right? You make a contract with them. Although manipulation doesn't have to be that way. Sometimes manipulation can be seduction or social peer pressure or, you know.
But yeah, but it's like hard to manipulate if there's no rules to go by.
True.
And so that's why think it's kind of, they have to kind of be lawful, is because they have this law, and then they go and they like use this, you know, these rules and manipulate them in order to get what they want.
Do you think that they're bending rules or breaking rules?
They can't be lawful and break them. Because that's kind of the whole point of chaotic, is like, fuck the rules.
If you have an internal law that you follow and like you feel like that's higher than any written law, then like you can do that. I mean, like Templars do that shit. You know, they're like, well, I'm lawful good. My God is higher than any like mortals' written laws. You say killing is bad, but I say it's the only way to purge the world of evil. You know, like a lawful evil character or even a lawful good character might justify their actions that way.
That's true. Though I will say that like in fifth edition, a part of the paladin oath of like devotion, which is the like classic lawful good paladin, is to respect the authority wherever you are, so long as they are just.
Sure. Well, then, I mean, it would just be like a lawful evil thing. Is like, if you know, if you want to go that direction, then, you know, following the alignment acrostic, then, you know, lawful evil would be, well, I should just do this by any means necessary, as long as it doesn't stir the pot, you know, and I can get away with it. I'm still going to kill and murder because I don't care about their rules. It's not necessarily that you don't follow the rules. It's just what set of rules are you following?
It's true. And there's an interesting question.
You might have an inner compass, right?
Yeah. But so this is the difference between, I think, chaotic evil and lawful evil is there's never a by any means necessary, because that's the whole point of lawful is there are some things you do and some things you don't.
Oh, there's no by any means necessary people?
Well, I feel like that's chaotic evil.
Oh, that's what you're saying. I thought you were saying chaotic evil also wasn't by any means chaotic necessary. Evil. I was like, so then where does that fall?
That's kind of what chaos is.
Sure.
You do the ends justify the means kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's very chaotic.
Like, to be clear, I do think that Gogra's thing, part of what her thing is for sure, like setting up the rules that all of them abide by. I think nobody has a better head on their shoulders for that than her. I think Parati and she probably get along pretty well because Parati's whole obsession is tyranny, right? And I feel like laws and rules would fit in his court more than anybody else's. I think that she respects rules and things, but is definitely willing to bend and break them if necessary, as long as she's getting what she wants. Because that's kind of the core of manipulation, right? Is like people... Manipulative people are ultimately only looking out for themselves, but oftentimes the way that they get that is by appearing to be for other people's good, or like, you know, kind of working behind the scenes or quietly like dropping a little something here, a little something there.
I would say that there's a big difference between Gogra and Parati, where Parati being this right tyrant or Parati is all about the like spirit of the law as well as the word, and like making those mesh together, and but like you want to get the word as close to the spirit as possible, and the mm-hmm. whole point of like tyranny is not to like it. Basically what I'm getting at is Gogra or Gagra, she doesn't give a shit about the spirit of the law. She wants to see what the law says and then use the wording of the law to get what they want, or to get what she wants.
Yes, I fully agree with that.
Which is different from Parati. That, I think, is kind of...
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's, well, and that's like, I guess what I was saying is more like Parati and Gogra probably get along on a surface level. I mean, I don't think any of the mutes really get along beyond that, but more just like they're willing to work together because, first of all, I do think that Parati put kind of some of the rules that they follow in place. I think that Gogra is probably the first person to like actually pay attention to them and take advantage of them, because I wouldn't be surprised if there's some hieromancy stuff going on, like on that level, right? Like it's a, we have to obey them because there's like literally magical force behind this. Not that they couldn't even break something like that, because they're fucking gods basically, right? But, or they have god level power, but it's more like, it's vastly more inconvenient and punishing to break those rules. So she'll do it if she has to. You know, like at the end of the day, Gogra is looking out for Gogra, just like any of them is looking out for themselves first. Although I think maybe not Parati, and I'll get to that in a second. But yeah, ultimately just saying like, yes, I think you're right that she follows within the confines of the law to an extent, is always looking for loopholes.
Yes.
Because to her, I don't think she sees them as loopholes. It's just like, well, technically this is okay, right? It's literally not breaking the law, so there should be nothing wrong with this. And it's a sort of social or cultural, like, a faux pas to do among them, like stabbing somebody in the back or whatever. But if it's within the laws, then, like, maybe these laws also hold the other mutes from utterly destroying each other or something. Wait. And also, to be clear, I don't think that all of these laws, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if like the laws exist as something that not all of them even bother to obey.
Yeah.
I think some of them are forced to obey. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Karnas was kind of like forced to his knees at some point, and like these were sort of cast almost like binding chains over him, and maybe he's been fighting against them since then or something. Maybe that's part of what he's fighting against. But you know, there could be this like endless like God Emperor level of like, well, we just need to feed, you know, shit into this to keep the spell going, to keep him down. You know, that could be a kind of fun thing. And he's always just like breaking the binds or something.
Yeah, because I'm sure that of all the mutes, they agree that Karnas is kind of the one who's most likely to kill the rest. With the exception,
he's the most likely to destroy the everything. He's the middle distance problem, right? Like Tears is ultimately, they all know they're not even quite sure that Tears could pull it off because he seems like completely out of pocket, like just so far gone. But also, so there's kind of like a 50-50 chance that like Tears can even make things happen, but Karnas is a far more immediate, far more loud, obvious threat to the rest of them.
Yeah.
And to existence.
Tears is a problem that they cannot solve. Karnas is something they can do something about.
Right. That's a great way of putting it. Is Tears is like Tears is global warming, Karnas is fascism. Tears is like, well, we probably could do some things, but it would require fundamental changes in the way that we do everything. And most of us are just fatalists shrugging our shoulders, saying nothing we can do. I'm just saying this is more like a, I don't know, I feel like most politicians are in that camp of like, it's too hard. Whereas, Karnas is like, well, we probably should be doing a lot more to deal with fascism than we are. But like the amount that we are doing, it's a very obvious real threat.
Yeah.
So
I want to, let's get back to Grogra for a bit. I'm thinking Grogra is, we need to separate Grogra from Tears, because Tears is like plans within plans, five steps ahead of you.
I think also Tears can be five steps ahead of himself. I don't think his mind is fully stable. Like, I think that it's maybe kind of fragmented because of the amount of time he spends staring into the howling void. And so, like, sometimes he even plans against himself, which makes him an even bigger threat, because you don't even know necessarily. Like, again, all of it is sort of the win more, right? Like, all of his strategies are sort of like, no matter what happens, he wins. But also, it is at such a conflict with itself and so self-destructive that, like, some of his plans are literally about, like, conflicting with his own plans or something. I don't know.
I think that's probably true. But we need to separate that from Grogra and with what Grogra does. And I think like relying on this like lawful bent might be helpful there.
Yeah.
Because Tears is just always doing everything in this weird way, where Tears is certainly like either neutral or chaotic.
Right.
Not lawful. Which Grogra definitely
what
seems
does, what does, yes, I agree. What does Grogra want? I don't think she wants to rule.
No, she wants to be the power behind the throne.
And this is the thing. I think oftentimes in high fantasy and in big sort of like mythical proportion stuff, like for instance, I think Wheel of Time is a great example. Evil is just selfishness, or it's just wanting to rule. And I feel like that's, you know, or like the Sith are like this, right? The Sith are all the same. They just want their own stuff. And their reasons for doing that might be different, but it's just like saying you can either be a person who looks after other people and thinks about others. You know, it's sort of almost like the societal designed morality, right? Where it's either you're looking after everyone or you're looking after yourself. Instead of like, well, there's shades of things, right? Like if you're completely self-denying, then like you will die because you will always put food, you know, it becomes like one of those. I'm sure in philosophy you deal with this, right? The idea of like perfect selflessness doesn't last very long because you'll go out of your way to feed other people before yourself, or you're not actually, you could be helping other people right now and you're not. You're just sitting here reading an article about philosophy.
Well,
you should be going down to like a food bank or whatever and not feeding yourself.
When it comes when it comes to being generous, there is generosity is a virtue. There's a vice of excess and there's a vice of deficiency. The vice of excess is right, complete selflessness, where you're giving away all you have, such that you need charity now. You need someone else to be generous to you, otherwise you will die, which is not good. And then there's the vice of deficiency where you are miser. You give nothing of yours to anyone else, even if they're in desperate need.
Right. Yeah, and I think Gogra is, instead of like trying to place her on the selfish side of the spectrum, I think she is thinking of herself. And I think that this is, again, because the origin points of these things are the Enneagram, right? The Enneagram is solely like the first and main thing it's concerned about is what is your survival tactic, right? Her survival tactic is based on the type two stuff, which is the need to be needed, right? It is basically, I will be provided for. If I make myself valuable to other people, they will do the same for me, right? And so I think I could totally see her like basically building up debt and like collecting debt from other people. Like, you owe me this, you know, like there's a lot of kind of placing things. The manipulation subterfuge isn't just I'm going to be selfish and I figured out this master plan. It's also, you know, I don't know, offering her resources as a way of coming back as like the banker or the loan shark with like a 10,000% interest on a magical level. Like you cannot actually, the debt that I collect isn't something that can be undone. Maybe, and so like making the devil's bargains and stuff. Yeah.
I think you're right.
Pax, for sure. She might be the mother of warlocks, or the matron of warlocks, or, you know, sort of the...
I think that you're absolutely right. I think Gogra can fill a very interesting space here, where Gogra's actually helping the other mutes, and is seen as, like, the helpful one, and often, like, mm-hmm. gets in and tries to help them succeed, so they're indebted to Gogra, and so that because maybe Gogra's endgame is that, like, maybe Parati or one of the other ones succeeds, becomes tyrant of the universe, uh-huh. and Gogra's behind Parati, controlling.
Yeah, they become like a shell or whatever. And like, here's the thing, Gogra might genuinely not care of whether the world is ruled. She might be so driven inwards on like on self survival stuff that all she really cares about is that she's provided for. But eternally.
Yes.
Right. And to maximal extent, and that she gets as much as she wants. And so like Parati could literally be ruling all things and she wouldn't give a shit as long as she got the thing she wanted and she felt like she needed.
Yeah. So I think Gogra is necessarily opposed to Karnas.
Mm-hmm.
And if Gogra knew what Tears was doing, would be also be opposed to Tears, because Tears is seeking to usher in the Nameless One.
Mm-hmm.
But probably right. doesn't know that that's what she's doing.
Yeah, well, I don't think most creatures can even fathom. I think that the mutes know that he's interacting with the Nameless One. I don't think they know why.
I agree.
I think it's anybody's guess as to what the point of it all is.
Yeah, I think Tears' goals are known only to Tears and possibly the Nameless One, if they can even know things at this point. And I think that's how we are going to be able to separate Tears and Gogra the most, is that Tears is alone and doesn't help anyone. Gogra is helping the other mutes if they're not seeking to destroy everything. And mm-hmm. Their goal, or her goal, is just to get power by aiding others in this weird way. Mm-hmm. It's a selfish, right, helping, but it is helping. And it's helping this with deck. Manipulation, sort of huge gaslighting.
Mm-hmm. There's this commander deck that I got as like all, it was sort of like a win more, but I win more than you kind of deck. Like a, basically everybody benefits. And, you know, it's very much like a devil's bargain deck. Where so like there'd be cards where it's like, on your upkeep, you may choose to draw an extra, like, you know, when another person's turn starts, they may choose to draw an extra card. If they do, you also draw an extra card, like, or you draw a card on their turn. And so it's like little things like that where it's like, well, this might actually help you in this situation where you're head to head with this other person, and I don't want to hurt you because I'm actively benefiting from your resources, and if I kill you, then I won't have those anymore. Or there's like literally like creatures where if you like spend a small amount of mana, you can take their creature and use it with haste on your turn or something like that. And every time you do it, like, the person who has this deck like gets, you know, tokens or something that give them, you know, increase a counter or something like that on their stuff.
That's cool.
And so it's like, my resources are yours to use, But by doing so, by the time that the only people are left, I'm so much stronger than you because of all the shit that I've been benefiting, not just from you, but from two or three other people who are also playing in this game, that, like, I'm basically unbeatable. And I think that, again, I don't think Gogra seeks to annihilate others. I think she seeks to make sure she always has space. And so if people are encroaching on her stuff, she won't hesitate to get them out of the way. But I also, yeah, so, and I think she has a lot of different faces that she wears. She is all things to anyone, whenever, whatever they need, right? That's her thing, is to offer and just get a small thing in exchange. So I wouldn't actually be surprised if for a long time there were people mortals who did not make reaching out to Gogra unlawful, or maybe it was still technically unlawful, but it was seen as sort of this like sad or pitiful thing because You'd have a lot of people in really dire situations reaching out to her and promising their, you know, eternal soul to her, right? And she continues, I think more than anyone else, she has this enormous store of these souls.
Yes, I think it's the interesting thing of like Gogra, like a lot of devils want to have a bargain with your soul where you also get fucked over, but eventually end up in the devil's clutches. But Gogra's like, mm-hmm. no, like, you know, you might get what you want and there may be no strings attached so mm-hmm. long as I get what I want. And it's like very weird, you know, bald faced manipulation.
And she's patient.
Oh, she's like,
I think she's really patient too.
What's that guy? Birdface from Moon Knight.
Oh shit. I don't. What is his name? It's not.
Khonshu.
Like Khonshu, yeah.
Who's like,
yes,
I will give you.
Absolutely.
You're dying. If you don't want to die, be my avatar.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I think she really is like that. Like, I don't even think. This is the thing that's so insidious about her. Is that she is the god you go to when you want to sell your soul. She's the mute you go to who will give you a deal that will not go bad on you, right? Like, she will only come to collect when you actually die. And at that point, it's like, well, does it really even matter? Right? Like, do you at this point, you know, like, yeah, that's something that you need to figure out 10,000, you know, years from now. Well, you know, for most people, like 80 years or whatever. But like, you know, that's something you're gonna have to deal with at some point. But like, I don't know. Is it even true? Like, is it even?
It's such an interesting manipulation because it's like she's manipulating them by being like, you get what you want and you just don't realize that you're getting shafted at the end of the day. But I just have such a long view.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think she's really patient. I also think that the closer that you are to her as like one of the other mutes or like lieutenants or something like that, the more easily you are deceived by her, or that like the more, what I mean is like it takes distance and perspective and watching her from the sidelines to see what she's actually doing, because the presentation she gives to anybody that she's actually interacting with is one that is calming. Like, I think literally, like, there are magical effects that follow her where, like, you are relaxed in her presence, you feel safe around her, you feel like you're protected. Like, more than, I had a thought, and I'm just going to throw this in here. I think Parati appears as an angel of light.
Yeah.
I don't think that Parati is
just like,
first of all, I don't think any of them need
devil.
To be like disfigured or whatever. But like, yeah, like he actively, I think he strongly believes that he is going to save all. And the only way of doing that is by locking in everything.
He's
right?
Kale.
Like, you know,
from League of Legends.
Kale? Oh, okay. I don't know who that
so
is.
So Kale, sure, is this like embodiment of justice, this angelic being who's like, you know, the sinners, you gotta smite them. That's the only way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of justice. You gotta fucking kill
them. It is a simple answer. Mm-hmm. It is a simple calculus. You do not need to do all this complicated moral thinking. There is one answer. It's very straightforward. To fix the situation. And I think, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of Oathbreaker Templars or Oathbreaker Paladins end up in Parati's camp. Like, they get so far down the path that they're like, well, I mean, logically, this makes sense, right? My god just isn't taking it to a big enough extreme.
I also
think... But I say all of that to say that Gogra, I think, similarly, I think these two, they may even see each other as, like, almost, like, either lovers or, like, family. I could see, mostly just because I want to stray away from the lovers idea, because I feel like gods as lovers, allies, one who's like the perfect ruler and the other who's a manipulator is like, eh, it's not that fun and it's done before. But the idea of like, yeah, undying brother and sister, or like, yeah, allies who've been here since the beginning, they were the first or something like that. And I think Gogra also is seen as this comforting presence or this protective presence, a motherly embrace who will take care of you.
I think,
you know,
half the time you're an Oathbreaker Paladin of Parati, you're actually working for Gogra and you just don't know. And that is probably the case for any of the mutes.
Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the stuff that they do, they don't realize the knock-on benefits. Or, like, literally, if you have somebody, your lieutenant, come from somewhere and just tell you, like, hey, I think we should do this, you might not know that it's actually, like, the percolations of a seven chain, you know, sort of this thing caused this thing caused this thing caused this thing that got to a situation where she knew that, you know, yeah, she's pulling strings. She's calling in favors. I think, okay, that is something, I don't know if there's any way that you wanted to go with this now, but I had a specific thing I'd like to talk about, a topic.
I think the last thing I want to mention about Gogra.
Oh, well, this is about Gogra. I just meant, like, it's a specific tint, you know. But yeah, go ahead.
Is that I think they also not only appear, right, as his comforting presence, not only do they impersonate the mutes, I think they also less often and more dangerously impersonate the regents to their worshippers, those who revere the regents.
You think this is kind of more where that energy is coming from than from anybody else? I think that makes sense. I think, like, okay, so Tears is all over the place, right? Obviously, some of these things, you know, make sense for them as well, but their plans are so chaotic and like, don't necessarily follow a clear line of thought, whereas Gogra is more like Palpatine, right? She's half throwing shit at the wall and just seeing, like, what sticks, but, like, she's mostly just kind of seeding things. She's laying down seeds of stuff to see what grows.
Yeah.
And I think that when she finds success in certain cults or whatever, oh, you know what though? The like cults of Gogra probably do exist, but aren't actually nearly as potent or powerful as not taking over an entire leadership of a cult, but it's the supporters. It's the youth group leader. It's the, you know, the Bible study leader or whatever. It's the person you go to when you need help. Right? You're not necessarily going to the pastor. You might, but like, if I have a problem, I might, you know, I've got this close group of people that I'm connected to and we're sharing life with each other. I'm going to go to one of them. And she gets into those circles. And sometimes I think that it may be 50-50 that they don't know that they're actually being used. There might be, she's just seeding doctrine, right? She might just be putting things into doctrine about like who to go to or how to, you know, she might alter like a ritual or something like that, because it like shards a slight chunk of somebody's soul and gives it to her, or something like that. But I think that there is as much people being like, well, you know, if you really need some help, I think I might be able to, I think I know a guy kind of thing, you know, like I think there is a, you know, one of the sisters of our God or something might be able to help you.
Especially I think with Prispa, compassion.
Yeah, yes, for sure.
I'm getting like very Annatar, Lord of Gifts vibes. Do you know Annatar?
Huh. No.
Annatar is the fair guise that Sauron went as. Annatar literally means it in like Quenya or Sonoran, the Lord of Gifts. And he went to Celebrimbor and was like, oh, let me show you how to create these beautiful rings of power. And
What if it was said that Prispa and Gogra were sisters, twin sisters?
This family tree with Parati is getting big, Frank.
Well, no, but here's what I was going to say. I think she made up that lie.
Of course.
I think Gogra seeded that story and is telling people that she's Prispa's sister, or like getting people to believe that so that they feel like she's misunderstood. You know, yes, she's technically a mute. There's no questioning that. But also, are the mutes actually as bad as people are saying, or are they just like, were they cursed? You know, is it sort of a Paradise Lost situation? And she, I think, can appear as a very sympathetic figure. One to like, I think she plays the pity card. You know, I think that it's definitely a thing where it's like, this happened to me. This isn't something I did. This was done to me. I was punished. I didn't know what was going on. This is the Nameless One's fault. And then Own took away my voice. And how unfair that is, because it's not a just punishment. I was caught in the crossfire, right? Maybe she's seeking to be redeemed, right? She's seeking penance or something, and she's paying for her sins eternally.
Gogra, according to Gogra, she was the original regent of compassion, and she had basically a sister, Prispa, who was jealous. And
twin sisters, identical twin sisters.
And Prispa
told
Own that because Gogra was so compassionate and so wanting to help the mutes who were getting judged, Gogra was like, oh, we shouldn't be so hard on them. We should, you know, consider what would happen if we were in their situation. And Prispa was like, it's because she was. And she whispered in Own's ear. Prispa said, Gogra helped them. So Gogra deserves to be punished. That's why she's so compassionate for these creatures. And then,
she's trying to flirt to convert, right? Like they sell the story that she's there because she's actually trying to redeem all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's trying to bring them back to the side of light or whatever. And she is the sufferer, right? Yep. She's she might even like be seen as messianic by some of them, right? Like there is a prophecy that she's actually going to redeem all of the absentium, and all of her work is about bringing that out. And like at the end of the day, like, I mean, here's the thing that makes all of this more fucky and I think even better is that faith makes it real, right? So people's stories about this stuff could start to alter the path of Halume. But also, I feel like she probably came up with 85 to 95% of the bullshit, and the remaining 5% is a choice of how she's choosing to interpret the past.
Yep.
Like, I think that maybe here's what it is. It's not that these are lies. It's that they are concealments or versions of the truth that are more convenient for her and tell a story that, like an Aes Sedai, she's not lying, but by the time you get from one end to the other of what she says, you may as well be believing something that she wants you to believe, you know? Oh, I like that. That's so good. Yeah, she's the suffering martyr.
Yeah, and so
she may even be seen as associated with Fenisil too, right? Maybe. Because that is kind of like, you know, associated with heroism or heroinism.
So
you know, it's the sort of the fourth archetype of. Yeah. Anyways,
I think Gogra is. I like this because it's. Gogra's no longer like this sexy, beguiling presence, because mm-hmm. that's typically the manipulative woman is mm-hmm. the sexy one.
Mm-hmm.
And instead is this like
she's
incredibly...
a scared lost child with the biggest heart.
Yeah,
she's the scared lost child with the biggest heart who wants to take care of everyone else.
And almost a kind of wants to save everyone. Or motherly figure who just like wants to help people mm-hmm. and is just like really dedicated to helping people that are lost, have made mistakes. I've made mistakes, that kind of thing.
Like, here's the thing. I think she probably fucks. I don't think she's a virgin.
Gotta fuck.
I think that she like, yeah. But I don't think that she weaponizes her sexuality in that way. In that way, because I think that it's not as powerful of a bond. Like, sex is something fuck? That can come and go.
Hmm? Think all the mutes fuck?
I mean, if they've got sex, what even is fucking at that point?
Is Umbarak the mute of, of ED?
I don't know. I don't know. for reference, Umbarak, if you need a reminder, is the mute of failure. So
it's a direct
I don't know. That's pretty funny. But like Gogra, I think is more like if she's the reason why she picks this as a guise is because the child, the vulnerable child that you want to protect, is so much more of a potent image. It's literally like built into survival shit. You know, like you see a lost child, you see a child who's scared or whatever, you want to protect them. She may even sometimes appear as a little child. Like she may even choose to present as that, as somebody who needs to be defended and taken care of. And I think if anything, like if there were like weird, horny thoughts, like she would probably just remove them from your head because she doesn't feel like she needs to do that. You know?
I mean, she's certainly,
if anything, that's kind of
Frank.
No, I don't think she is. And I think that she does it if she wants to, right? And she might sometimes want to do it as a form of manipulation, but that's kind of transactional.
Oh, yeah.
And what's better than being transactional? Just being provided for. No questions asked, because of the state of your nature, right? Children are vulnerable. They can't look after themselves. She's much more, I think, would be leaning towards that because, hey, I need help. Why should you help me? Because you should. Because I'm vulnerable. Right. And look at this wonderful, you know, Greta Thunberg level, like I'm working so hard here. I'm trying to save all of them. I'm getting my hands dirty, but it's the only way to do it, you know? So, yeah, I think Gogra probably has. Yeah, it's more of like this sad story. It's one that is sympathetic, depending on who's telling the story or who's listening. I think it's probably 50-50 where some people are like, yeah, I don't buy it. And there's definitely other people who are like, well, she deserved it or some shit. Or, you know, how do we, you know, we just don't know. They're the gods. It's not for me to decide or whatever. I do think that spoiled children might get threatened with like a, oh, you're acting like Gogra or something like that. Like, I think she can be kind of like a spoiled kid. But I really do think she works hard to paint herself as being this like heroine.
I think I know what the realm. So we should talk about what her realm looks like, and I think I know what it's called.
Mm-hmm. What's it called?
It's called Keratos.
Keratos?
Keratos.
How do you spell that?
It has variant spellings. It's either okay. It's either like charity, but with an A-S instead of a Y. It's also with just a K or a C. So I can spell it for you.
What about Keratos like that? I put it in the
feed?
The god mill.
But where'd you, oh, you put it in the doc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or Charitos.
So Keratos.
I think it's a little bit too close to charity itself, but.
But that's the point, Frank. It's all about charity. Keratos,
yeah.
in Latin means dearness, costliness, high price. Charity, the attitude of kindness and understanding towards others, regard, esteem, affection, love, lack of something, deficiency.
I mean, it's pretty good. I think maybe we just keep it to Charitos right now. However you want to pronounce that. Cerathos, Keratos, Charithos. I think that's kind of the thing, right? It's like, oh, you know, however you want to pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
We're welcoming here. Yeah, what does her realm look like?
It might be like, I assume it would be similar to like an angelic paradise.
I think not.
No.
I think it more looks like London after the bombing.
Really?
Yeah, because I think it should be something where it makes your heart, like, you know, it's like plucking at your heartstrings.
Like a
oh,
ruined
man,
paradise.
Like any, you know, like one of those, like, yes, like a ruined paradise. Yes, she has very much strategically and meticulously engineered it in a certain way where, like, even gardeners have, like she, like, figured out how to like make things look like plants that just like, you know, that just can't seem to grow right or something.
They're maybe like slightly wilting. You're like, oh, I just need to water it a little bit and it'll be beautiful.
Yeah. It doesn't look like a complete desolation. I feel like Umbarak is like everything's corrupted, falling apart, broken, or like it's beyond that, right? It's dead, right? Things are not just dying, but they're dead. But like Gogra's, like I think Keratos or Charithos, I think that it's like a flower that's needed water for 3 days. It's not dead, but something that you can take pity on. The sun is in the sky or some sort of light, you know, if there was a sun, I don't know. if there's a sun or some like point of light, it's like low and kind of watery, and the sky is a little bit overcast, but it feels like the light could break through at any point, and it never does. Yeah, everything should feel like it's right on the edge of being good. Like, it just needs a little bit more work. You just, you know, like calling out to you if you just notice something that's slightly off, and it's just like, oh, well, if I just adjusted this one thing, it would make this better. Table legs with that one that's just slightly too short, and then like you put a stopper under it, and then like another table leg, and now it's just unwobbly the other way, and you just like spend 20 minutes, and like now it's like on 6 pieces of paper, and it's still wobbly. I think like that's kind of her whole world.
The wobbly table leg.
It just needs a little help, just a helping hand. And okay, so I like that. I think we're probably, well, actually, we started at like 12:20, so we've still got a little bit of time. But I think we are definitely kind of in the final stretch here. I had two questions or things that I wanted to bring up. The first was, what are her followers like in Cherethos itself? But also, specifically, what is her relationship here with like hieromancy and magic, and not just magic, but like people obeying her word kind of thing? Like, it feels different and more special than other people, and in a way that's different from Parati. Like, Parati is going to extract things out of you. You are going to obey his laws no matter what, which I feel like is more like the traditional way we've thought about hieromancy, right? Is you cannot disobey. Yeah, it's like
Parati's
the Oath
God. Is late-stage capitalism.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like Gogra's not that, though. I feel like, if anything, it's about wanting to obey. It's about wanting to help. And she doesn't necessarily...
Gogra's all about, like, suggestion. Just like...
Yeah, it's about social pressure. Yeah. And my question to you on that is, how... Does she just, like, not fuck with most of the demons, for example? Like, creatures that don't have a sense of, like... honor, duty, or like cause and effect, even of just like, well, you know, this is mutually beneficial or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think she fucks with the demons. I think that's right.
She probably can use them.
Yeah, I think
but
she can use
it's
them,
more
but
from
it's
a
not
distance.
Her preferred tools. They're not delicate.
She sees them as a resource to use, but it's not like a dude. I think she maybe just calls herself the divine child.
Ooh.
Just like. Or that is how she is known. She chooses to be. And this is, okay, to be clear with all of this, I think she half believes a lot of what she says, or more than half believes a lot of what she says. I think that that's maybe where a lot of the power of what she believes comes from.
But
I
think this is the biggest question.
You know, I don't. Oh, you know what?
This is the question, Frank, which is, how much does she believe? And I don't think we know.
So here's the thing. Prognan, we haven't adjusted it here, but Prognan is supposed to actually be, we changed the abstract of wisdom to be faith, right? Because it felt like it made more sense for Veritas to just be truth and wisdom,
yeah.
Right? Like knowledge and wisdom kind of go hand in hand to that level. I think that she might also be borrowing. I don't think that she is of the abstract of faith. I think that she uses it, though. I think that she sees it as a resource that is unclaimed because nobody else wants to use faith that way. And so she uses it. She is not of it, but she takes advantage of people's faith in a way that, like, well beyond what anybody else is doing. And I think you're right. Like, I don't think that she believes it in her heart of hearts, but I think it takes a very unique situation, and who's ever going to hear her say that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, when the mask is fully off, there's just another mask on underneath it, and mask after mask after mask. And like, when she's truly on her own, or when she's truly in a situation where she can't get her way, I think that's where her ire comes out. And she starts to truly like, no, I'm just going to lock this down. And her reasoning, like, she's reasoning the whole time, right? She's not just doing it without any explanation. And because, like, most of the other gods would do it that way, right? They would be like, fuck you, I don't need to explain why I'm doing it this way to you. I'm going to take what I want because I want it. Whereas she's like, no, there's a justification for this.
Yep.
But I guess, so my question was, yeah, like, even among demons, you know, she's going to manipulate them in that way. But, like, I don't feel like devils are necessarily honor bound. Maybe she gets them to obey their own hieromancy or something. Like, she doesn't cast the spell, but she gets it so that, I mean, like, maybe it's structured this way in the Absentium because she got behind Parati as, like, big brother, like, her big brother or something like that, and got her him to set it up this way so that she would be looked after, mm-hmm. you know, and that like she could take advantage of this hieromancy in a very specific way. She had this loophole, you know. I'm imagining whatever this hieromancy structure is, that like when it was embedded in the structures of the Absentium, I think that it was something where she had a say in that, and she was like, oh, this will benefit me if I leave this one little sentence in here about the way that it works in the constitution of the Absentium, then I benefit forever from this. I can continue to use this one loophole over and over and over again.
I think...
What are you thinking?
I think absolutely. I think hieromancy is very much... Parati is command, she is suggestion.
Yeah.
Or like inception.
I don't think she would put somebody under Gaius. Yeah, it's very much inception. She's not going to put somebody under Gaius. She's going to make it feel like it was their idea and they wanted to do it from the first place. And they came to her and cast even Gaius on themselves, kind of level of like, I'll show you how committed I am, right? That kind of thing. What are you thinking about?
I'm trying to think what more there is, I want to say. And I don't know, I'm quite happy with what
this
we've
isn't
so far, and I don't know how to add to
it. I mean, I think this is pretty solid. I think there might be one or two last things that I was going to bring up. Oh, one was just like, we got to do that as an episode, though. Like, the creation of the Absentiums, like, I mean, we really have an opportunity to do some fun Paradise Lost level shit with that. Because I realized, like, there are kind of some, like, the history of the Absentium is a thing. There are ways that it is and it wasn't.
Yes.
I think we do have some first mutes and mutes who came afterwards. I like the idea that Gogra, whether she was one of the first mutes or not, claims that she was, or doesn't, you know, she doesn't claim anything about herself, right? But she gets people to claim things about her. She suggests and sort of lays the groundwork of stuff. And I think that there is an event that has a name, which is sort of the building of the laws and the legacy of the Absentium, with like maybe devils were demons who were either bound by law or who chose it, who chose to set aside the chaos and to live by a certain order. And whether that was, you know, by their own choosing or whether they were tricked into it, I kind of like the idea that all devils are actually just kind of like demons who had been changed. Like, it started with demons. And also, like, what are demons? You know, did they start out as just fallen angels, or were they something else?
I think at first there was only angels. Then there was the fall. And then there were only fiends. And then some of the fiends decided we should have, right, this law. We should have order. And some of them said, fuck you, no. And that's where we get demons, and that's where we get devils. Because in the end, all demons and all devils are fiends.
Okay. Yeah, I'm cool with that. I mean, I think that is, yeah, we can work with that. I have one last big question for you. Okay, so we have this pretty good idea now of what Gogra is, right? She's this vulnerable child. How does that manifest? What are her interactions with the other mutes look like? Does she have many? Or does she have any interactions with the rest of the Absentium? Like, I think that she is. I'm imagining she's doing a lot of, like, kind of moving from place to place to kind of either make herself a presence that is paid sort of tithe to. Or she's like, you know, you kind of got to be on the move if you're going to make a bunch of deals, right? Whereas Tears is like, no, you come to me. I'll bring you to me. I think that it works to her advantage to look like this transient, right? Who is just like never quite still. Maybe Cherithos like touches on all other realms or something like that. It was like where other realms start to fall apart. There is Cherithos.
It's definitely
just kind of the.
I think she interacts with other mutes the most of any mute.
Hmm.
I think so.
Oh, yeah, yes, that she, and I think, first of all, she maybe interacts with Parati the most. Like, I think Parati might even be fully blinded by her, because what is more valiant and, like, fixing the broken than literally protecting this vulnerable child, right? I think he's fully blind to, like, she has completely manipulated him to the point where he will never see her as an actual manipulator. And even if she was, I think he'd be bound to be like, well, it doesn't matter because she's still vulnerable.
I think it's more like
that. And like people are like, you don't get it. She's not actually vulnerable.
I think that...
But I think the other mutes are probably less deceived.
Yes, I think Parati is more deceived than the others. But I do think that Parati still understands that that she is a manipulator. But understands that, like, oh, they manipulate because they're vulnerable, and that is why I need to.
Right, exactly. I think that's how he sees it, is like, oh, dude, you know what? Like, there are so many stories that float around about Gogra's origins as well. Maybe we just say now nobody really knows what she originally was. Right. Like, maybe another one was that she was the firstborn child. She was the first mortal child of the Golden Ones. Like, before then, there had never been any born. And she was the first one who was born. And has been cursed because she offered the one who was a kindness on the first day of the, you know, of the thousandth year or something like that. And it was that kindness that enabled him to, like, do his terrorism or whatever. Oh, yeah. Or their terrorism, I should say.
So many lies. It's hard to find the truth.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess I'm just saying, I think within the structures of the absentium, I don't know. Well, I can't say right now, but I think it's probably not everybody who is like, nah, I don't fuck with Gogra. But I think that several of them.
I think Umbrak.
Like, I feel like Karnas
probably won't help.
Yeah. Well, I think that Umbrak is a mark, right? I think he's a fucking mark that Gogra is going to all the time to get shit. I feel like between Umbrak and Parati, and I think Umbrak knows even more so than Parati, but, like, everything's just getting fucked for him on a level where he's like, well, I don't have a choice. I don't care how much debt I'm racking up. I need to, you know, he's like an addict, right? Yeah. He's like a gambler who has a gambler's addiction and is like, it's unfortunate, but it doesn't matter. I need to see what the next hand is. I need to, you know, get that rush again. I don't care how much debt I'm accruing. I'll deal with it when I'm dead.
And Umbrak's the next hand. I'm going to win it all.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Also, I don't think there is like a typical response of any of the mutes to any of the mutes. I mean, I think they all have unique relationships, right? Like, Tears is somebody that Gogra does not fuck with.
No one fucks with Tears.
Because...
Except maybe Karnas.
No, because no one fucks with Tears, except beyond that, like, she's like, well, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to mess with that. Are you kidding me? Nobody knows what they're doing.
The only one, like, who fucks Tears,
I've got
is
plans
Tears.
Within plans. I think that she feels like she could step to him, right? She's like, oh, I'm capable enough, like, you know, within my own head or whatever. I'd never say it, but, like, I can manipulate better than anybody, maybe even better than Tears, if what you can call his chaos of lack of any sort of plan, manipulation. But why would I? What's the point? I'm not going to benefit from that. And I think, so Umbrak is going to be an interesting one. I am curious about the relationship between Umbrak and Gogra, because we've kind of articulated her as sort of being this, like, grandmotherly figure. You know, she's sort of, you know, you go to her lands and, like, you start to turn, like, gray and just, like, sort of, like, fall, like, collapse into the ground and eventually are just kind of subsumed by the place. And she's seen as, like, kind of grand matronly, right? And I feel like a grandmother looking after a granddaughter is a common trope, but I don't think that that's their relationship. I don't know what it is, but I feel like there's something really potent there. Karnas, I think she treats like a wild dog, in offense, is just like, you know, and maybe there's stories where, like, even Karnas can be tamed by Gogra, right? Like, she's such a, like, a beautiful and caring and gentle soul that even the wrath of Karnas's demons are quieted when she walks there. The reality of the situation is I think she just doesn't walk past that house.
Yeah.
Like, I think that You know, it's a scary dog, right? You gotta stay away from the scary loud dog. What about Lagazoff, though?
I think
that was where I wanted to.
I think Lagazoff, again, so long as Lagazoff gets their due. And Gogra is like, yeah, I mean, you know, I can give you some stuff. Because again, Lagazoff's
I think he wants her lands. I think Umbarak knows he's fucked. I think Lagazoff thinks he can win.
Yeah.
I think Lagazoff knows that she's a manipulator and is constantly trying to. I think it's carrot on a stick kind of thing, right? Like he just can't help it, or like, you know, fish hook, right? Yeah. Like bait. Like he's just he can't help it. He knows, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, but I could get it this time. You know, I could win this time. And he tries to come up with plans and stuff like that, but like they don't pan out, or they maybe even pan out, because that's the thing, right? Gogra actually gives you the thing that she says she's gonna give you. You know, she's going to share her cake with you or whatever. It's just when you die from a heart attack of too much sugar, she's going to eat you.
She's going to eat that heart. Ooh. And she gets to eat the cake, too, because it's in that stomach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, I think that Lagazoth just doesn't trust her because she seems so alien to him. Like, I think that he is down to fuck with it. But yeah.
I think.
We're okay. Done. Well, I think we're definitely done. That's plenty.
Thank you.
Hopefully that makes up for the like months of being absent.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't hesitate to share this with others. Feel free to rate or review us on the podcasting platform of your choice.
For references to previous episodes or other fun links, refer to the podcast description. You can find our Twitter and email there, perfect for asking questions on things you'd like to cover in a future, you'd like us to cover in a future episode.
Thanks, as always, to Josh at the Siltland Silker for the Land of Heroes theme, and to Sam Wade for the album art. You can find Sam at By Sam Wade on Twitter and Instagram.
We're capping off each episode this season with a reading from the Book of Truth, which is AI Religion Bot on Twitter. Divine, beautiful child Carter, the most vulnerable of us all and the one with the biggest heart. What excerpt do you have for us?
Here we go. The bliss of ignorance, all the more potent for being concealed. The truth is, it doesn't matter if you believe. The pleasure is yours to take. For as long as you're alive.
It's pretty good.
And as always, don't forget, there's always more deals to make.
More children to protect, who then take everything from you and leave you stricken. Bye! Bye.
'What are we doing is the question. Are we finishing out the mutes?
We've got three left. We did Karnas last week, and actually here's the thing, we didn't do the
realm
naming the realm. My question is to you, do you want to name the realm now, or do you want to wait until the end of the episode and name the other realm we're going to be doing first, and then come back and name that the Karnas one?
I think we should probably do it now, so that way we just, like, before we get into the state of mind of another mute, and then things get a little confused.
Okay, yeah, let's, so, what did we talk about? So, Karnas is about death and destruction. We talked about it being kind of like this gladiatorial ring, almost, of, like, an arena where he's fighting all these other demons. I mean, we could just start with something really easy, which is, oh my god, there's Drago. You could do, like, start with just Gladius. Obviously, I don't want to do that, because it's way too easy and cheap and stupid.
Yep.
But,
If we want to go also cheap and stupid, you might like Zephos.
What's Zephos? Is that, like, fight? In...
It's sword.
What are the vibes that we want to evoke? We want to evoke combat. Maybe something like really staccato, like with like hard consonant sounds. I mean, Karnas's name also is like that. Is there a body part that we loosely associated with this realm?
The cock. Because it's like a sword?
A fist?
Fist?
No, that's too... That's too... Because, like, a hand can be many things, and I don't like just saying that Halume only has a fist, you know?
What's the most combative of the organs? The lymphatic system?
Yeah. I kind of like that idea, actually. What is it, the limbic system that is used for... No, that's just... That's, like, kind of like hormonal chemicals, right?
I'm not sure about the limbic, but lymphatic is your, like, lymph nodes and your other, like, stuff for fighting off invaders.
I kind of like the idea of literally, like, something that's kind of like an autoimmune disorder. Like, literally Halume's body attacking itself, right? Like, it's literally been fucked up to the point, like cancer. I mean, honestly, right? Like, isn't cancer literally the body, like, attacking itself?
So cancer is a defect in the reproduction.
Oh, no, it's just that blood, that cells just continue to divide and divide and divide, right?
Yeah, they continuously divide, even though they should have, basically. We have a, cells commit apoptosis, which is they kill themselves if they detect they have certain damage to their DNA. Oh, like they're busted?
Yeah.
And if they don't do that, it can lead to cancer. And so it's just a flaw in how cells divide can cause cancer. And it just continuously divides until it's a strain on the resources of the body. Could do phlegm. Phlegmatica.
The tissues where lymphocytes are formed in the lymphatic comes from the Latin word lymphaticus, meaning connected to water. Lymph from Latin lympha, meaning water, is a fluid which flows through the lymphatic system. I mean, lymph is kind of a fun word.
Yeah.
You could do something with that. I kind of like the idea of using phlegm as well. What is the four? There's the four humors, right?
Black bile, yellow bile, blood, and phlegm, I think.
Humorism. Yeah, phlegmat, sungavin. Oh, that's probably not Latin. Yeah, blood, yellow bile, black bile, and phlegm.
I know my four humors, like, Frank.
You do. When things are, like, out of balance, a person's not healthy. Right? That's kind of the gist of it.
Yeah. If you're too sanguine, you need to be bloodlet.
Mm-hmm. People who have yellow bile are bitter, short-tempered, and daring. The people who are composed of black bile are lazy, fearful, and sickly. Those who have phlegm are low-spirited, forgetful, and half-white hair. I mean, for sure, like, phrenology shit. Or pre-phrenology phrenology shit. But
it's like, you know, astrology, but your humors.
Because they also associate it with, like the skin colors as well. Like, apparently people with black bile have black hair and black eyes, so, like, Italians, I guess, are lazy, fearful, and sickly. Oh, apparently people who have phlegm are low-spirited, forgetful, and have white hair, so I guess you just get more phlegmatic when you get old. Oh, that's why phlegmatic means, like, being old and or, like, oftentimes it's like a bloviating old professor would be considered, like, phlegmatic, right?
Yep.
Okay. I think lymph as a entire, like, syllable is pretty solid. I don't know how we'd necessarily break that down, but, like, I think if we use lymph as a suffix or something, like at the end of the word, lymparos.
That's not a suffix.
No, I know. I'm just kind of playing around. Also, we got to get the staccato sounds in there too, like the ch and k and ta. I don't know how those show up in Greek and Latin, but, like, we could.
Taka lymphos.
Timmy fucka? No, that just sounds like Timmy fucks.
Timmy fucka.
Connected to water. So, yeah, what are some words for water in other languages?
Oh, aqua.
Voda. Voda. In Slovakian. Voda. Kind of fun.
Like vodka.
Yeah, or water. Voda. What's an aggressive version of water? You have, like, waterfalls, you have, like, a storm, right?
Wave.
Instead of it being, like, you know, kind of, like, easy and moving, what is the equivalent of that, but, like, a current rapids, something where it's like you're being embattled by being underneath it.
Riptides.
I like that. It's going the opposite direction. It's pulling away from the shore instead of going in. It's like it's actively like working against you. And the harder that you try to fight, I mean, it has very combative elements. Yeah, what's
and you can't fight a riptide. That's the key. So apparently, the United States Lifeguarding Association specifically says, "Do not use rip tide. Use rip current. Rip current is the most appropriate term."
Oh sure.
Cacafos.
Cacafos.
So I quite like kakos, because in Greeks, it's bad.
Kakos. It literally means the word bad?
Yeah, basically. I'm trying to remember the word for good. It's the same as the word for beautiful.
Kakilempha? I think these sound too, like, poetic. I think we need something that sounds... like maybe just one syllable even of just like it's just like almost like it should come out like a grunt.
Yeah.
Lymph might just have too soft of words. So maybe a sound. So maybe we just use the L-Y sound. I like the cock sound.
Do you know? So there is the origins of kakos is hard to say because it is ancient Greek. There is a Proto-Indo-European root called kaka, which is to defecate. And there's also cacao.
What about kleish?
Cacao is to shit. And then there's a Phrygian kakon, which means harm. And Albanian kek, which is bad.
Kloish? I think the K-L-U sound is good there. Kla. Shloithak? No, that's awful.
Shloithak.
Shloithak.
That sounds like a gnome name.
Yeah.
I am Shloithak.
Oh, wait. Hang on a second. There's a random word generator I found at one point. Aplur.
Kalifika.
Plage is actually kind of good. Kalifika is pretty good, too. You usually are better at this than I am. Plage, I like that sound. Plage.
Kalifiklage. Kalifiklage. I refuse to accept any kind of cluster of letters. P-H-Y-J.
Not you can't pronounce that fish? You can totally pronounce that fish. Yes. There's also Gaki or Gachi, which is G-H-A-C-I.
How do you pronounce that, Frank?
Faijun.
Nuclear Faijun.
Nuclear Faijun. Like, Kalifika feels more like a place where you would watch, like, valiant warriors fight than these people. This is like an all-out brawl, you know?
Boom. Kaga Klag.
Kaga Klag. Kaga Klag? Kaga Klag? That's pretty good.
Actually. Kaga Klag!
I think you're pretty close with Kaga Klag. Or Kaga Klag.
Kaga Kar.
Kagakar. The AR sounds pretty good, actually. Huskar. Huskar's closer. Honestly, the AR, I think, is the way it should end.
I think it'd be very close. Kushkar!
Kushkar. Kishkar?
How are you pronouncing that?
Kishkar? Actually, maybe that's K-Y-J-K. Wait, what about this? Kishkar. I could throw an apostrophe in there, so just be count your blessings that I'm not. Wejkar. No, that's not anything. I don't even know how you pronounce that. KJK. Agugug agaga.
Do you know that police song?
Uh huh.
Agugug.
What about Kishkar?
Agaga aga.
Kishgar? Kishgar is definitely like just.
Kakarn.
Kishkor? Kishgor? I think the KYZ sound is maybe like where we want to start. I feel like Kish is a very good, and it also looks good. I feel like Kishgar is actually pretty close.
Kizgar.
Kizgar. What about Kizkul?
Kizkul.
The ending's a little soft. I feel like it's really close. Yeah, I think it's close. The ol sound, instead of ol like Golgium, it's like ol sound with an O sound. Is there something we can get? I feel like...
Kolkar. Cold car. Turn on heat.
I think Kizgor is still the closest. K-Y-Z-G-O-R.
Are you sure it's not Kilgor?
What about Kizgor spelled that way?
Kizigarkala Gdos Marlethotep.
Okay. What if we just went with Kizgor for now and we can come back and do this some other time? Like, okay. It's like 11:30 almost. We haven't started the actual episode.
That's true.
All right. We've been recording Kizgor, for over an hour.
Make it so.
Yeah, we'll call it Kizgor for now, and if we hate it, which we probably will, we'll come back. I hate looking at it. I'll say that. That's actually as a mark in its good plus column is I really don't like looking at it. Kizgor, it looks terrible. Ugh. Kizgor.
That will not sell toys, Frank.
No, you cannot sell. Yeah.
All right. So.
Okay.
Is it even?
Let's do an episode, huh? Because I've been meaning to ask, did you, have you checked out, I assume that you've been watching Lord of the Rings episodes as soon as they come out.
The Rings of Power, yes.
Yeah, is it good?
I think that it's so far, I think it's a decent show, okay. But a bad Lord of the Rings adaption. It's a bad Tolkien adaption.
Okay. Is it just not very faithful?
It's not very faithful, it's basically fan fiction. And they okay. have said as much. They're like, this is not canon, this is fan fiction.
Okay, really? All right. Is it fun? I mean, does it feel like it's an interesting version of it or telling or whatever?
I'm still currently trying to figure that out because it's a little bit confused at the moment. Because I think if you don't know anything about the Lord of the Rings and you're watching it, you're probably like, okay, you know, they're going to answer a lot of these questions. And But on my hand, to me, it's like, I know the answers to all these questions, but it's out of order. In this really
and also,
weird way.
You might not, like, the way that they answer the question might be different from the way that you actually know the answer is, since it's fanfic. It's like, oh, but what if this had happened instead?
Yeah, and especially considering
like, that's very possible.
They take the timeline for the Second Age, which is, like, you know, 5,000 years, and they condense it into, like, 100 years. So,
oh, no. Really?
Yeah, because they don't want to have to get a bunch of new human actors every fucking go round. Because all the elves will be around, some of the dwarves, but like the humans are gonna die off every 200 years or so, depending on if they're Numenoreans or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy, I have a lot of things I need to add. There's been a lot of requests.
But yeah, so basically, I think that the show so far, I think, is fine. I'm not like super hyped on it, but. Like, the Tolkien fan in me is really hurting watching it.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry about that, man.
This could be so much better. And I'm just, again, like, with most shows, when I watch it, I'm like, oh, you know, why did the writer make this decision? Like, if I was writing this, I'd write it in this different way. But in this one, I'm like, why would they ever fucking do this? This character would make way more sense doing this thing. And then, like, the biggest thing, which if they did this, I cannot watch anymore, but we have yet to be completely confirmed that they did this, is they may have made the elves mortal.
Oh, that is a big change, yeah.
Yeah, that just makes elves better humans, which is weird. Because previously, they were like significantly different, because humans could die, and elves could not. And as such, like, elves are, like, literally tied to the world in this, like, fundamental way where when the world ends, so too do all elves. But humans are, like, strangers. They appear in the world for some time, and then they leave it. And they go off to somewhere that only the gods know.
Oh, really? It says that?
Yes.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that the humans, there is, at least in the mythos, like, an afterlife for them. I just assumed they ceased.
No, yeah, very much so. There is some kind of afterlife, and we just don't know what it is. Only Manwe, Sulimo, and Eru know.
The classic three.
One of those.
Actually,
two.
It could be two.
Manwe Sulimo is one person.
Gotcha. Well, I'm sorry your the fanfic isn't better written or more faithful to the adaptation on your behalf.
I feel like it would be I would enjoy it much, much more if they just didn't call it Lord of the Rings and they just changed some of the names. And so it was just like, you know.
They say it was inspired by, but then you don't get all that heat, you know, like then you have to like kind of come up as your own thing. I wonder if Game of Thrones people had that frustration watching the TV show. Like, I haven't seen it, but I know that it starts to really depart from the books. Obviously, I know the last season is like a total joke. And like is, you know, they were like, oh, you need to rewrite the ending. And they're like, well, we wrote the ending we wrote. And it's like, well, I don't know. Get fucked, I guess. But like, yeah, no, I am curious.
Frank. I don't know if you know this.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't know that. Books
that are out for the most part. I've even read like the encyclopedia, but not the like history of Westeros thing, but not, I haven't read Fire and Blood, which I'd like to, but
okay.
And I liked some of the changes they made. I thought some of the things that happened in the books were a bit weird, and the show chose not to do some of them, and I'm like, okay, I actually like this better. And then, then the show's ending, obviously, I thought it was bad, but I don't know what the ending will be, because it hasn't finished yet.
The show's ending? Oh, you mean like the end of the Game of Thrones?
Yeah. Yeah, because
hasn't it been like 15 years or 20 years since he finished the last book?
I don't know. It's been a long time.
Apparently, endings are hard to write.
Fucking Jorge Martin. He's gonna do it.
Which do you think comes out first, Star Citizen or the final book of Game of Thrones? Not the next book, the final book.
Ooh, that's a good question. Oh, I don't know. The final book of Game of Thrones.
Like in the specific chronology, not like, you know, other series or House of the Dragon or whatever else, you know, stuff he wants to do.
I think that they're going to be the same because neither of them will ever be finished. Martin has said that if he dies, no one will finish the books.
Wow.
He does not like people coming in after the fantasy author dies.
Wow.
Finishing it, yep.
Wow, that's just kind of like a fuck you.
Yep.
I'm telling you now, this is going to be Half-Life 2. Like, before Half-Life 2 comes out, there's never going to be another one.
Yeah, I think that
fuck you guys.
George is kind of a dick.
He seems kind of like a dick. Not he, just like the way that he interacts with his followers and stuff. I mean, I don't know. He just seems like a guy who wants to write his books and doesn't like want to. He seems like a very good writer and he's very bad at being a human being.
Yeah, I do think he's very good at writing, of course. Like, I've read his books. I think they're well written. And there's a lot of good ideas in there. I'm sure he's very creative. But yeah, he just seems like a bad, like kind of a shitty person. He's not like evil by any means. I just think he's kind of petty.
Sure, sure. Well, aside from that, how you been doing?
Good. Yeah, I've been watching all these new shows. I even been watching Shulk, which is bad. Like, whoa.
Shulk?
It is impossible to watch. Yeah, She-Hulk.
Oh, She-Hulk. You don't like She-Hulk?
It is so bad. I hate it.
Really?
Every time she looks into the camera and starts doing some
weird the CG. Oh, the fourth wall stuff. Apparently that's something that's coming that comes out of the comics, but
well, it's fucking dumb. I don't like it. So I don't
care. Yeah, I don't know. It's been fine. Like, it hasn't been. Gosh, I feel like Disney keeps on trying to, like, point at the stands and be like, this is going to be the feminist text for the, like, codex for the next century or something. And, like, you guys, you're not changing the world with your girl bossing. Like, this is not what the world needs. This is not even what the world wants, even in the world of girl bossing. Like, this is so just not well done. I think it's fine. I think that it is, I don't know, in places, I think I was going to say I enjoy it more than Hawkeye, but I don't think that's true.
Oh my God. You can't say anything worse about the show if you say you enjoyed Hawkeye more.
What? You didn't like Hawkeye? Are you kidding me?
I refuse to watch it on principled grounds.
Oh, because it's Jeremy Renner?
No, because it's Hawkeye.
What's wrong with Hawkeye?
He's just like a dude with a bow, and that's his superpower, is bow dude. And I'm like, no.
I'm not watching but he's, dude. I mean, it's just an action TV show about a bow dude. Like, I mean, if you think of it like Arrow, it's no different.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Good point.
At least Arrow, the thing. Like, it's also, you get him like shooting arrows with his pecs.
It's a quote unquote Christmas movie. Like, you know, it's got like that same Christmas vibe that like Die Hard has, where like I may actually just sometimes pop it in when it's like Christmas time, because it's just, it's very well, like, kind of plays with that. It's a show that happens during Christmas time. It's not a show about Christmas. I'll definitely say that.
Is A Nightmare Before Christmas a Christmas movie?
We're not having this conversation. It is not 2004 on memebase.com or I Can Has Cheeseburger or whatever the fuck.
I think it's a Halloween movie, personally.
Demotivational posters, whatever the hell. Man, old man, those are some rare Earth memes. I don't know. It's whatever you want it to be. Yeah, no, I don't know. She-Hulk is...
It's bad. I think it's bad.
It hasn't been great.
I think it
And
might
it's not
be
even
good.
The CG. The CG is just kind of like, shrug, whatever. I'd rather see the facial expressions of the actual actress anyways. Also, she's very good at what she does. Like, she's an incredibly well-done actor. I can't remember her name, but do you ever watch Orphan Black?
No.
Okay. Orphan Black is a really interesting show. It has some like biotech sci-fi type stuff going on. Without spoiling anything about the show, she ends up playing like multiple characters and makes all of them feel completely distinct from each other, and like sometimes is the only person on camera for like an entire episode, and it's just her talking to a million other people, and it's like she is really good at catching character and articulating it. But yeah, definitely better than She-Hulk. She-Hulk is just...
This is my feeling about She-Hulk. I think that
it feels like it's not for me, is part of it, but I don't know who it is for, is I think the question. Like, millennial girl bosses? Like, pro-capitalist feminist girl bosses? I don't know. Like, I'm just... I don't know.
I think that Disney's been having a problem ever since Thor Ragnarok, where... They did the kind of not taking it seriously really well, and it was a huge hit. Mm-hmm. And then they just started doing that ever since. More and more. And it's like, no. Like, that worked well in this movie.
The weedening of Hollywood, if you will. Yeah. Do you know about that?
No, I don't.
Oh, just Joss Whedon, because he's a piece of shit, but like he also had such a potent effect on the entire culture of like geekdom and the way that geekdom movies are like written now, of like a "well, that happened" quip all the time. You know, you don't think they're not gonna blank, right? No, they couldn't blank.
Then blank.
Beat. Blank. They're gonna blank. Yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Like there were some captions when Dune came out, and it was like Joss Whedon's Dune or whatever, and it had like captions that were like that that were happening instead. I don't know. I gotta all grab right, the but... door because Maisie came in.
Okay.
Oh, now she's just sitting in the box behind me. Hey, sweetie. Now she just wants to know. She wants to know what's happening. She might take a nap.
I'm getting this vibe as well with Love and Thunder, which I haven't finished yet. But I've watched.
Wow, that's saying something. You started it but didn't finish it. I mean, yeah. Movies usually should be, you know, should be able to be something you can start and finish in one episode or one sitting.
Yeah, so basically how I'm feeling about this is that, right, they had this big hit with Thor Ragnarok, and they're like, oh, let's do, you know, more series where, like, there's these jokes and japes, and, like, we don't take it seriously, because that was a huge hit. And then I think they're just doing it too much, and it's just not landing, for me at least.
Well, I mean, I don't know if Love and Thunder is the best reference for that, because, like, it's still Taika Waititi. Right? Like, that's still Taika's work. And so I'm not surprised that it's got that attitude. I think
Taika went too far with it. Because I think there's is this supposed to be funny? Because this is just dumb.
Yeah, I think that was what I think I mentioned this when I had first seen it. But it was like, Taika, You went to Old Country Buffet with Taika, and he's like, you've never had blank before? Well, let me just load up your plate, and just kept doing that with all these different flavors that kept on popping up. And it just felt like, it feels more like a mixtape of cinema bits than it is necessarily like a cohesive whole. And the thing is I think that's kind of just Taika's style. Like, when he really, like, unleashes, that's just the direction he goes. And I think he's maybe just at his best when he's being held back some. I think George Lucas is similar, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, like, George Lucas, in the first few films, had a lot more kind of oversight. And Star Wars, it was still an enormous phenomenon, but, like without question, right? Like, it's Star Wars. It's always been Star Wars. But there wasn't the momentum of decades of like cultural embedding, you know, and like even in the last few years, sort of Thor Ragnarok has kind of ascended to this pinnacle of like top three Marvel movies. In most lists, it makes at least the top three, maybe even the top five if you don't enjoy comedy. And I think Waititi had a longer leash in Love and Thunder because the one thing I do appreciate about the Disney Marvel machine is that they do seem to just kind of let their directors go with the thing they want to do and try and trust their directors, which is why you end up with Inhumans, or not Inhumans, Eternals, which is like, is it good? I even rewatched it and I was definitely higher on it than most people. And like, I would say, no, I don't know if it's necessarily a good movie, but it's a very interesting movie. And
it was fucking weird.
And I enjoyed watching it. And I definitely like watching it again because like anything that it sort of plays with eternity interacting and interfacing with humanity, like the God Emperor or like the Old Guard was a really good movie.
I need to see the Old Guard. It's on my list.
I quite liked it. And I think they're actually going to do a sequel to it.
Ooh.
But like any movie like that deals with like immortals living among us is always super interesting to me. So I had fun with it, but it definitely felt like it was a better movie when it wasn't trying to Marvel.
Yeah.
So. Whereas I think Thor Ragnarok could have been Marveling a little bit more is maybe Thor Love and Thunder. Thor Ragnarok is a. It's also like the thing is I feel like you're fucking up if you're trying to make Thor Ragnarok again. Not because the flavor is bad or whatever, because you're never going to make that movie again.
Yeah.
Like, those are sort of like those perfect storm situations, right? Try and recreate, like, I don't know, Iron Man 3. Or, like, no, I think you didn't like Iron Man 3. A lot of people didn't like it.
It was fine. Iron Man 1 is the best Iron Man.
What's like a really solid middle of the road Marvel movie? Like, I didn't hate watching it, but it also wasn't amazing, but I'd watch it again. Spider-Man Homecoming. Or maybe Spider-Man Far From Home. They're fine. They're not super amazing or anything. I think they're interesting. I like watching them because I like watching Spider-Man stuff, but like try and make that again, because that's definitely like the caliber where if it's middle of the road enough, and you let the director do things that they want to do with it, you can go in really interesting directions. But like, if you tell them the door literally is unlocked and she can't get out. Nice. Sweetie, you're a dumb dumb. I think she wants me to pet her in the kitchen.
Specifically in the kitchen?
Yeah, it's a thing. Anyways, I think you get my point of like, don't make any movie again necessarily, because it's like, it's not just about repeating mass content, but like a higher likelihood of success is that level of lay out a general roadmap and then let the artist do their version of it is, I think, maybe, I don't know.
I feel like that's the style of Thor Love and Thunder, where it's, sorry, the style of Thor Ragnarok, where it is this like very comedic, very like a superhero movie where things are ridiculous, and that, I feel like that is like a limoncello where you're like, oh, that's nice. I'm glad I had 2 ounces of that. And
right.
Then they,
yeah.
Then if they give you 12 ounces of limoncello, you're going to vomit immediately.
Right.
So don't give me 12 ounces of limoncello. Give me 2.
You know what? I think it's a sequel comedy. Those are notoriously hard to do. Right? Because the thing that makes a comedy good is oftentimes the novelty of the jokes like landing from nowhere, and sometimes like, you know, like the bits in the building and stuff, like, you know, Caddyshack 2 or whatever. I don't know. I've never watched any of those like classic, you know, Gen X comedies, but
the best sequel comedy ever made is The Godfather 2.
I was going to say it's 22 Jump Street. 22 Jump Street's actually extremely funny because, like, the whole thing, the whole joke is that they're, like, on a meta level. Because I think it's Philip Miller and Chris Lord, who are the guys who did Lego Movie and some other really good stuff. The whole joke of 22 Jump Street is they're like, okay, we have to do everything the same this time. We ain't doing like nothing different. Like you just do it exactly the same because like it's just like it's joking about like corporate just wants them to just make the exact same movie to make the money again. And they keep fucking up because they can't do that. They can't like repeat doing the same thing. It's pretty funny. It's a good time. Like but most of the time, it usually just doesn't work because. I don't know. Good comedy is, I think, kind of like lightning in a bottle. It is really hard to capture and yeah. Definitely even like 100 times harder to do a second time.
Absolutely. That's true. And so that's where I'm at with She-Hulk. And I felt it with Love and Thunder as well. Is this just because like one of my favorite Marvel movies was like Civil War, where it's like. The premise is fucking ridiculous, but they fucking stone face that. And they're like, this is serious shit. This guy with a shield who's really strong is fighting this dude in a weird space suit. And they're shooting lasers at each other. And they're beating each other up.
This guy's like got a metal arm. And it's about his dead parents.
And it's, for some reason, there's definitely some homoerotic tension going on. As they're just
for
like
sure. Well, and also because I think that Batman versus Superman came out around the same time, and it was just such like the cosmic difference between the two. Also, Marvel was probably that was when it was still a little bit more cottage, like mainstream hadn't picked up on it. Well, actually, that was probably around the time that it mainstream had really picked up on it because this was sort of like just after. I think Age of Ultron, because there were jokes about it being the real second Avengers movie or whatever. And it was just like a lot more solid, you know, Avengers, obviously, like, you know, it didn't so much, you know, get the foot in the door as much as blew the door apart. You know, the first one. But yeah, anyways, I don't know. We're not movie critics, but I think I feel the same way is like the momentum was there. And also it felt like there was a continuity of vibe that was more holistic than what we're currently seeing. And like I don't know, like it's kind of one of those things where it's like I don't think it's a bad thing any more than sort of how Star Wars has broadened out, right? Like, because more Star Wars to me is just more Star Wars. Is it good? Is it bad? I don't know, but it's more. And honestly, with Star Wars, it's one of those rare things where I'm actually okay with just getting more of it because it means more of it's going to be there's more opportunities for it to be good, and there is more opportunities for it to be Book of Boba Fett. And I think Marvel is just kind of worse.
70% of Book of Boba Fett. There's a really solid 30% at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple of good ones. I don't know. I wanted Boba Fett to be like merciless and actually a fucking bounty hunter instead of just like walking around town and being like pushing people's guns who raised them down and being like, we don't do that anymore. It's like, fuck off. Yes, you do. You're a fucking bounty hunter.
Picking up fucking like small dogs, kissing them on the forehead and putting them down. Or
you were like delivering child slaves at like age 12 or 13. Like slave child brides. Yeah, that literally happens in the Clone Wars. Yeah.
I want to make one comment on She-Hulk, one more, which is I think that the fourth wall breaking is much more in its like place in the medium of comics. Because comics in general are like much wackier.
That's true. That's actually a good point. I appreciate, here's the thing. I like the swing. I don't think it's that, it hasn't impressed me yet. I think the jury's still out. I'm not as down on it as you are. I think it's fine, but I also wasn't expecting much. I think the CG's pretty rough. I think they need to pay those people more and also stop, like, I don't know. I think CG people really need to go on strike in Hollywood and get like increased wages or something.
Just
or unionized. I don't know if they're even unionized yet. Hmm?
I said if they're going to strike, they'll just replace them with CG.
I mean, these could be scab workers, honestly, for all I know. I feel like I think CW fired a whole pile of CG artists because they threatened to go on strike or something. And yeah, anyways, my thought just being like, yeah, it doesn't seem like it's necessarily coming together. And also, I think Marvel's maybe a little bit different because I'm than Star Wars specifically. Because I'm like, with Star Wars, I'm like, yeah, I'll fuck with it. Just because there's an entire galaxy of stuff you can do. Whereas Marvel's continuity is a little bit tighter. And so everything, I feel like each swing should count. Less swings at the bat, bigger hits. Whereas Star Wars, I'm just like, just go out there, man. Get a pitching machine and just see what you can do. Because there's so much garbage already in the Star Wars world, you know? And like, somebody can tell me, oh, well, this one's actually the extended universe stuff you should check out. And it's like, there's 100 artists, you know? It's like Games Workshop approach.
Anyone can have where, a license, which means there's so right. much shit.
Yeah, whereas I think Marvel has never really been that because a huge part of the Marvel thing is the continuity, right? Is following things from one to the next. And that's much easier for people to do if they don't explode and have like a million other things. I think this is also part of the reason why, like, for instance, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. wasn't canon. Like, it became like not the multiverse or something. I think literally like in one of the seasons, they thought they were going to get canceled the next season. So they literally mentioned that like Thanos was there or something. It was Thanos had landed in New York and then there was just no further mention of it. And the next couple of seasons are bonkers and some of my favorite shit from the whole show. Like it's actually like, it just feels like they're like, well, we don't even know where our place is in the canon anymore. So let's just fucking do what we want. And they like sort of softball suggest it like, oh, maybe that's what this thing is. But my just saying that is because like it becomes so much harder to track the continuity. And yeah, I don't know. I think part of it is just like, I mean, phase four has been what? Like, we don't even really know. Like, there's not really been any connective tissue to hold the thing together beyond shrugging, gesturing at the multiverse, I guess. But, like, there's been no sort of movie to cap it off or anything, and apparently Phase 4 is already over. Like, apparently we're entering Phase 5. I don't even know what that even means. So, I don't know. I think Marvel has just changed in terms of, like, what it is as sort of a artistic organism. You know, like, it has evolved into... It's done kind of what Apple did after the iPhone came out and Steve Jobs died. When you don't have that, like, taskmaster, you know, profit model... PROPHET with 1,000 hands, you know, of just like everybody has to do exactly what Steve Jobs says or whatever. Apple just becomes a very large tech company that is really good at figuring out innovation and stuff, but doesn't necessarily have one unique vision that they're trying to drive and push and say like, this is what we want things to be. And so as a result, it's just like, well, they make really good computers and that's pretty much it. And also they're really expensive computers.
Yep.
But they're also what, like the marriage of tech and cool, you know, like, so yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think my viewing of Marvel hasn't changed, but I could see it changing. Like I still haven't seen the newest episode of She-Hulk and I'm not going out of my way to watch it. Whereas like WandaVision was like, you know, reserve viewing, you know, it was like, I'm like, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to watch this same day. Usually not, you know, sooner than that, but like, I went out of my way to, like, watch that and Loki and stuff like that, so.
I definitely feel like She-Hulk, I actually started out being like, okay, this is interesting, I might enjoy this. And I feel like it got worse the more I watched.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Yeah, well, okay. I hope that I don't feel the same way, but I wouldn't be surprised if I do. Well, that was definitely us. We should probably do the episode, huh?